you know, I mean, this is a story of horse ownership. Really, we're running a short order kitchen most of the time out in that barn because we've got a variety of different needs. And where there's so much stuff out there to read now about how we can make mistakes feeding horses. In general, you buy a hay that suits the bulk of the horses in your barn. And in my experience, dilution is a great solution for feeding, making a hay work for everybody.
May the forage be with you. A podcast brought to you by the Peace River Forage Association. Welcome to episode 10. I'm your host, Nadia Mori. Today's podcast is a revisit with Sheila Niblock, who is an equine nutritionist and forage science expert. In this second part of Sheila's talk, she dives in more detail into minerals and vitamins as they relate to balancing your horse's rations, as well as what to watch for in terms of poisonous plants or plants that can have adverse effects on your horse's nutrition. Again, if you own horses or grow feed for horses, you won't want to miss this second part of our discussion. And also, if you missed episode 9, where we had the first part of the discussion with Sheila, you might want to go back and check that out as well. If you are not a horse person, don't sweat. I do have a little something for you after the talk with Sheila when we dive into the Forage Fact Sheet Vault and look at Forage Fact Sheet number 30, Getting the Most from Your Soil Moisture, along with a list of resources which may be of assistance if you are struggling with feed shortage due to dry conditions, or if maybe you were in an unfortunate situation due to wildfires this season and you lost some of your winter forage, either your feeding range or your prepared hay due to the wildfires. So stick around for that information right after Sheila's talk. For now, let's jump into the talk with Sheila and the second part of her talk on forages for horses.
What about vitamins and minerals? You know, you're going to test your hay and you're going to get a hay test back, and it's going to have the calcium and the phosphorus and the magnesium, the sodium and the potassium on there generally. Those are the macro minerals. They're the ones that are important for muscle function, for bone, and for the electrolyte balance. And you're not going to have any information there about trace minerals. Trace minerals vary quite a bit from region to region, but in general, all of Western Canada is low in copper, zinc, and selenium. We're low in all of those. And so most good minerals that have been manufactured for horses take that in consideration and manufacture minerals that are going to meet the needs of horses on a variety of soil types, eating a variety of hays. So it doesn't really matter what your hay test says. I would be feeding a good mineral. Whether you put that in a box and cut it 50-50 with loose salt so the horses don't tank up on it, they don't go to town on it and eat too much, or whether you have it in a pellet and you give the horses a mineral pellet every day, whatever, I would be supplementing the hay you're feeding with a good mineral supplement. And the reason for that is because of the fat-soluble vitamins that it provides. Fat-soluble vitamins are vitamins A, D, and E, and they are not in plentiful supply in stored forages, and the trace minerals, which are also not in plentiful supply in forages because the soils don't contain them. So yes, I would always feed by a vitamin and mineral supplement to your horses, even if you've got a really nice hay that you've managed to source. If you're feeding a lot of concentrate because you've got a performance horse, that reduces the need to feed minerals. If you're feeding a complete feed, if you're just feeding oats and beet pulp, for example, rice bran, something like that, and you have a competition horse, then you also must supply vitamins and minerals from some other source. They are very, very important for competition horses. Now, one of the favorite topics I've found on the internet these days, the favorite things to worry horse owners about, is overloads of selenium, iron, copper, or heavy metals like aluminum. Those who've gone and tested their hay for iron, copper, or aluminum often come back, oh my goodness gracious, they're terribly worried because either the iron is high or the aluminum's high or whatever. Some of this is just a red herring. It's really not an issue. It's not an issue at all from a nutritional perspective or from a soil science perspective. First of all, selenium is invariably low in Western Canada. And it means that our forages are always low in selenium. The only time this is not the case is if you're growing forages on land that has got old mine tailings spread out, or you're irrigating with water that is downstream from an old mine that may have leachate in it. And there are areas all over BC and in Alberta that have got pockets of high selenium soils, like very high selenium soils, and they're always, almost always associated with soils that have got old mine tailings on them or leachate from old mines. But they tend to become kind of legendary, and everybody knows about them because invariably what's happened is the forage has been fed to cows and the cows sloughed hooves or whatever because the selenium was toxic level. So they are the exception. They are rare. They are rare. And in general, I wouldn't worry about it too much. And I would be choosing a mineral that has got selenium in it. The National Research Council guidelines say most horses, you know, 500 kilogram horse, 1,000 pounds horse, need about a milligram of selenium a day. Most minerals are going to provide 1 to 3 milligrams a day. The maximum safe level of selenium is about 20 milligrams of selenium a day for a 500 kilogram horse. So you can see that, you know, the amount of selenium is going to vary a bit from field to field, but it's all going to be low. And if you're feeding a mineral that's got 1 to 3 milligrams of selenium in it, you're still in no danger of ODing your horse on selenium. And selenium is really important. It's a very important antioxidant for performance horses. And it's really important for reproductive health and for a lot of enzymatic reactions in the horse's body. Copper is one that is really low in our soils. Again, unless you are in an area with leachate or heavy metals, mine tailings. And again, I'd always be choosing a mineral that's got at least 100 milligrams a day being provided for your horses. Copper is important, especially for growing horses. Copper is really important for the hoof wall, and it's also really important for growing horses because copper is what facilitates the connections between the bone tissue cells as they develop. So if you want good, healthy bone growth in growing horses, they need to have a copper supplement. Milk from the dam has almost no copper in it. And foals are actually relying on copper stored in their livers that they got from their mother when they were still in utero, before they were even born. So as soon as a foal gets to 3 or 4 months old, it's a good idea to get them onto a foal starter pellet because to complement a good quality hay, because they are going to need those trace minerals. Now, what about minerals like iron and aluminum? I've seen myself a lot of buzz on the internet about these two and about how there's rumors out there that they are the root of all the problems for all our horses everywhere. And this is simply not true. Iron and aluminum are the two most plentiful trace minerals in soil around the world. They are part of the earth crust. And so there's always going to be iron and aluminum in a hay analysis because there's always a bit of soil contamination. Also, iron is an important part of photosynthesis. The chloroplast, which fixes the CO2 out of the air to make sugar in the grass plant to allow it to have energy to grow, has iron in it. Iron is a really important part of photosynthesis. So all plants have got some iron, but horses have got a marvelous inherent mechanism, hormonal mechanism to protect themselves from too much iron being taken up in their gut. So in other words, if they eat lots of iron, it all goes out the back end. So don't worry about iron in your equine diet. Despite what many websites are saying, it's just not worth it to be worried about it. It's around because it's in the soil. Same thing with aluminum. There's been some interesting trials done where horses were fed high aluminum supplements and they excrete it all. It is really just not available. So don't worry about it. If you do see internet chat about how bad iron and aluminum are for horses, scroll on by, because it's probably intended to try and entice you to buy a supplement that you don't need to buy. Do you need to buy, one of the questions I hear a lot is, you need to buy a mineral formulated for your area to complement hay sourced locally. In other words, if you're buying hay that's grown locally, or if you are growing your own hay, do you have to buy a mineral that's formulated for your growing area? No, you don't. You don't. Because primarily what we are providing with a mineral supplement is to make up the, pick up the slack and make the difference up between the potential shortfalls in the hay. And that would be mostly trace minerals and mostly fat soluble vitamins. Fresh forage growing in the field is loaded with the very important fat soluble vitamins, vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin E. But it deteriorates very, very rapidly in stored forage. And as a matter of fact, you can pretty much consider that that hay that you baled in the summertime has no more fat-soluble vitamins in it by Christmas. It's gone. They're all gone. And those vitamins are very important for healthy horses, important for all horses. They're important for immune function. They're important as an antioxidant. They're important for good hair coat and good hoof health. And so it's important to ensure that you are feeding enough, and all the manufactured minerals that are available for you to buy, whether you're getting them shipped in or whether you're buying them from your local feed store, are going to be providing those fat-soluble vitamins according to National Research Council guidelines. And regardless of where you live and what hay you're buying, you need to supplement those. Trace minerals, again, there is a pretty broad range between what the minimum needs are for a horse of trace minerals and the amount that is toxic. So most good mineral supplements are providing copper, zinc, manganese, iodine, selenium at a level which is going to meet the NRC, National Research Council minimums, but go nowhere near toxic. If, say, you are feeding another supplement, or if, say, you happen to have a high copper forage, for example, which is very rare, I might add. So no, the answer is you don't need to buy a specialized mineral that's formulated for your area. Find one that is, one, A, that your horses will eat, B, that's affordable for you, and C, if you want to talk to, you know, your vet or your local agriculture representative from the Ministry of Agriculture or a nutritionist, find one that's going to best meet the needs of your horses based on where they are in life, what kind of hay you've got, and what your expectations are from them in the way of work. So, one of the questions I get often is, what do I do if I test my hay and the NSC, the non-structural carbohydrate, is high, and I've got five horses and it's okay for all of them but one, and one's had laminitis in the past and tends to get too fat, and I can't have a high NSC for that one horse? You know, I mean, this is the story of horse ownership, really. We're running a short order kitchen most of the time out in that barn because we've got a variety of different needs, and where there's so much stuff out there to read now about how we can make mistakes feeding horses. In general, you buy a hay that suits the bulk of the horses in your barn. And in my experience, dilution is a great solution for feeding, making a hay work for everybody. You can limit intake. Again, I know if you have horses that in a field with a shelter over winter and you're feeding free choice hay with a round bale, you're just going to have to keep an eye on body condition. And it's worthwhile for everybody to look up how to body condition score your horses, and actually go out there if you can and check for condition and body fat over the ribs, et cetera, over the winter. Take pictures once a month if you're worried a horse may get too fat because they're eating too much. If you do have horses that tend to get too fat, you might have to separate them. You might have to do something to help prevent them from getting laminitis because of being too fat and eating too much. But in general, my advice is usually you buy the best hay that fits for all your horses, and then you dilute that hay or limit that hay to the horses that need something different. And if you have a decent hay, but you think it might not be quite good enough for the yearling you're bringing along, it's easy to have it establish a plan where your yearling gets extra goodies every day, whether you put a halter on him and lead him out and offer him a good concentrate feed that is formulated for growing horses, or whether you lead him out and you give him a small meal of soaked cubes, alfalfa cubes to bring his protein up. Doesn't matter. It is doable to top dress, so to speak, nutrients for a horse that's got more specialized needs than the bulk of your horses there. Another subject that comes up quite readily in discussions with horse owners about different forages and hay are weeds. A stand that's been seeded in the last year or 2 years with a good grass variety or a grass alfalfa stand is going to be pretty free of weeds. But weeds do tend to infiltrate as the stand ages. As the stand ages, some of the grasses become less viable. They become stressed due to weather conditions, winter conditions, et cetera, and you start getting some weeds invading. And there's a whole bunch of different ones. Many of them not a problem at all for horses, but there are a few that you do need to watch out for. Up in the Northeast, I know that they use the highways. They will seed the sides of the road with mixes that contain all-sike clover. The deer like it. The deer will eat it. It grows readily. It's a legume, so it's a nitrogen fixture, so it'll grow just about anywhere, and it helps prevent erosion of the sides of highways, ditches, that kind of thing. But the problem is then the stuff spreads, it invades into stands of forage, and there's lots of stands of good hay for horses that have pockets of all-site clover. There are some growers who are really careful who try to avoid harvesting that all-site into hay for horses. It depends on the amount of it. All-site is toxic for horses. It does contain substances which is not good for horses. The key with all-site is dilution. You know, if you find the odd all-site plant in the hay that you're feeding, that's not going to be the end of the world. It's not going to be the end of the world at all. But if you have great, pockets of it, it might be worthwhile to consider not feeding that part of the, because it's generally in pockets and it's not through the whole stand. But not feeding those bales to horses, or else if it's in your stand, you might have to consider doing spot spraying with something that'll take the legumes out, but not the, if it's alsike out, but not the grass. Of course, it's going to take the alfalfa out as well. So you might have to consider reseeding if it's bad enough. There's lots of weeds like curled dock, tansy ragwort, Queen Anne's lace, false dandelion, mare's tail, buttercup, and mustards. Just a whole variety of mustards out there. Some of them come in a new seeding and they're annuals and they're gone after you cut the grass or the field the first time. Many of them, though, are perennials, and again, they're a sign that your stand is not as vigorous anymore, and your hay might have infiltration of some of these weeds. Fortunately, most of them are not palatable, and the horses won't eat them. You'll find them lying around out there like lumber because the horses will pick them out and leave them behind. There are a couple of weeds which are toxic and the horses don't leave behind, and those are a risk, and there's a couple of them. Again, all-sike is one of them. All-sike is one that, they have to eat a lot of it before it's going to cause a huge problem for them, but I would be keeping an eye peeled for it. All-sike is that big green leaf clover with the jagged edge on the tip of the leaf, and it does not have the white V. The white V one is red clover. It does not have the white V. Another plant you really, really got to be careful of is hoary alyssum. And hoary alyssum is one that's got a very unmistakable seed head. Look it up. If you think you've got a problem, it's a teeny little round, papery looking seed head. Horiolissum will founder a horse very, very quickly, very low quantities. Last year was a bad year for Horiolissum in the North Thompson region. Growers that had never really had a problem with it before, with grass alfalfa stands, had a problem last year with Horiolissum. And I think it was because of the kind of growing year we had. It was wet. It was wet for longer, and the Horiolissum got a foothold, and it grew. And there was a number of cases where horses had what they get. They go lame. They have horrendous heat in their feet, like they've got a laminitis, and they get very, very swollen legs. If you pull them off it right away, they will generally recover from it. But it's downright scary, and it's a very toxic weed. So be really careful of Horiolissum. Hay that comes from areas in Alberta, like around Brooks or the Palliser Triangle, can contain foxtail barley. Foxtail barley is nasty stuff. It's, you know, it's a weedy grass that and the heads have got awns on them, which are brutal in that they stick inside your horse's mouth. And if you do are sourcing hay out of that area, grass alfalfa hay, big bales or whatever, then you are at risk of foxtail barley. I do know that with the increased use of Roundup Ready alfalfa varieties, one of the reasons that growers have done that is because they're growing hay for export, for cubes or whatever, and it'll be declined immediately if there's any foxtail barley in it. The overseas, Japan, China, and all that, they just won't touch it if there is foxtail barley in it. So stands of hay that have come off Roundup Ready fields do not generally have foxtail barley in them, but any older stand, and again, any areas that are droughty will tend to be more at risk of that. So you got to be careful of that. Same with Russian thistle. Russian thistle is it's tumbleweeds. And if you look at the awns on that, they're nasty. They're just big prickles on it. On the headlands, again, older stand, you'll get Russian thistle invading around the headlands, and you do sometimes get hay that will have the odd bale that's infected infested with Russian thistle. So be cautious about that. If your hay does have weeds, again, zero tolerance for Horiolissum. Watch out for all-site clover. You can dilute if you, say, hit a bale that's got all-site clover. If you dilute it with another bale without, you're probably really reducing the risk because it tends to be in pockets. And other weeds like mare's tail and things like that, they have to eat a heck of a lot of it before they will get sick from it. Buttercup is toxic if they eat it green, and they almost never do. But it's not toxic in the bale once it's been dried, so that's not a problem. And most of the other ones they won't eat anywhere. Anyway, another question I get sometimes is, can I feed hay that's been in a stack for more than 2 years? And yes, you can. It doesn't change in nutrients over time. The vitamins, fat-soluble vitamins, decline rapidly after harvest, very rapidly after harvest. But nothing else really changes much. It stays pretty much the same. The only thing is that, yes, it's going to tend to get more dusty as time goes by because it's going to get kind of dried out. You're going to get more leaf shatter if it's got alfalfa. So you will have more stem and less leaf in there. So use your own judgment. But invariably, if you need hay and someone's got a stand that's stored stand that's in good shape, that you want to buy, I wouldn't worry about it too much. Do be cautious, though, that you don't buy hay that's got rodents in it. You know, lots of tunnels through there that suggest that there's been rats in there, because rodent feces and urine will carry diseases like listeria. Down here, you know, we get possums. Possums carry equine protozoa myoencephalitis, which can be a death sentence for a horse. So in general, you got to be cautious if it's stored, that it's not too dusty, and that it doesn't have any contamination of animal feces or urine. So the subject of forage is huge, and we could talk all day about any one of these topics. in more detail. And there's probably all sorts of topics that I haven't covered today that you might still have questions about. Please do feel free to connect with your agricultural rep. If you have more questions, I know all those folks well, and I'm happy to answer questions. They can pass my information on if you would like. I am not a forage specialist, but I did spend many, many years doing forage recommendations for farmers in the Fraser Valley. And it's a subject that is near and dear to my heart because forage is so important in the diets of both cows and horses, for that matter, but in particular for our horses, where really, unless you have a primo working equine athlete, it's going to be 80 to 90% of your horse's diet. And so it is a very important consideration and probably one of the more important feed investments that you will make at every year. So thank you. Thanks very much for listening today.
Thank you so much, Sheila. That was an amazing overview of forages in horse nutrition. I had a couple follow-up questions, if you don't mind.
Yes.
So you were touching on the protein sources, and you mentioned like soybean being a good source of lysine. Mm-hmm. Now, up here in the north, we don't really have soybeans, and I was just wondering what your thoughts were if a producer had a horse owner had access to peas, if that would be a suitable source of protein as well.
Yeah, peas are definitely a help. They need to be crushed in some way. You feed them in small enough amounts that they can be chewed up well, but peas are a marvelous source of protein. Yes, they are.
Wonderful. And, you know, for cows, we have cow bites, or for sheep, we have sheep bites. Is there a program out there as well for horses to balance your nutrition?
There is a really nice program that I use myself. It's called Feed XL. And it is a downloadable program. You subscribe for a year. You could subscribe for one horse or 20 horses. They have different levels. The basic level is about $60 for one horse for 1 year. And you can do any amount of rations you want for that one horse. It does the basic stuff. If you pay a little more money, you can get the upgrade of the same software, and it provides trace mineral nutrition ratios, you know, ratios like calcium to phosphorus, zinc to copper, that kind of thing, and also information about carbohydrate content, for example, non-structural carbohydrate. You can specify whether your horse is a PPID horse or whether your horse is insulin resistant, etc. And that's a little bit more money, probably closer to $100 for a year. But the program itself, the software, was developed in Europe by an equine nutritionist, and it's now available with a version in Europe, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and North America. And it's very, very comprehensive. It has a massive database. Again, if you go for the slightly more expensive version, it has a huge database of feeds all over North America. And that's manufactured feed. So if you say you are buying, you're getting a Buckeye feed, for example, you can find it on that, and it will have the complete nutrient breakdown for that feed. So that would be the one I recommend, is Feed XL. There's one other one as well, and it's affiliated with a feed company. And anytime anything's, and I worked for a feed company for years, and I know that, you know, I mean, I love talking to horse people, and I never recommended a product that I didn't think was suitable for the client. This one is with a feed company, and it's Mad Barn. Mad Barn is doing some very interesting stuff, actually. They've got a lot of very interesting supplements out there, an Ontario company, and they have a nice little software package free of charge on their software, on their website. Now, if you do use it, of course, you're going to get the pop-up saying, we need all your information. And then they're going to be coming after you afterwards to say, well, you want to buy this product? You want to buy that product? And that is your choice. However, they do have some interesting products. They do try to follow good, solid peer-reviewed research. And I will say they have some interesting products available, along with an interesting software package that you can utilize.
Great. And water often comes up with other livestock as a very important component of nutrition, and I assume that's the same for horses. Is
yes.
there anything in particular to pay attention to for water quality?
Keep an eye on, you know, potability, first of all. Iron content is important. Iron in the ferrous, that's F-E-R-R-O-U-S state, as opposed to the ferric state, is more available in the gut of a horse than ferric. Ferric is the one that is in hay or the soil or whatever, and is far less absorbable in the gut of a horse. It's not absorbable. Bottom line, it's not. Ferrous is. And so there is this really good mechanism, hormonal control in the intestine, the small intestine of the horse, that regulates how much iron is taken up. But it can be overwhelmed eventually. And that would be one way it would be very high iron water. So that would be something I would be concerned about. The other one would be water that has got very high dissolved solids and also very alkaline. And the reason for that is entroliths, that's these big lumps of accretions of minerals that horses can get in their colon, which cause impaction colics, or the uric acid crystals in the bladder of the horse. More common in geldings, but again, if you get uric acid crystals in the bladder of your gelding, he's going to potentially be straining to urinate. He could have bloody urine. And if your vet does an ultrasound, he'll probably be able to see this sludge in the bladder. Horses excrete calcium naturally. That's how they get rid of extra calcium in their body. They excrete it through the urine. So the calcium is in solution, but in a very alkaline environment, it can precipitate into crystals, and then you've got potentially a problem. So then you would be needing to either treat your water, and that does work quite effectively. It increases the sodium content of the water when it's treated, but horses will get rid of sodium, no problem, unless they are an HYPP horse or, you know, have got hyperkalemic periodic paralysis, something like that. Even then, they're going to be able to get rid of sodium. Or if they have kidney problems, they have no problem with sodium. So you're far better off to treat that water and make it a little more horse friendly.
Mm. I appreciated your mention of the noxious weeds and to be careful about that. And we do have quite a bit of foxtail up in the area as well. So definitely something for people to watch out, especially around like disturbances that happen from oil and gas, which is quite abundant.
Yes.
So
yes,
definitely
very much so.
Appreciated that.
Very much
yeah.
so.
And
yes.
then you mentioned the testing, the feed testing, and I just wanted to add that the Peace River Forage Association also has the forage testing probes that are available for people to borrow. So please test away. It's important to
you. Yeah, and I think too, probably then you can, you know, your analysis is only as good as your sample. And so that's why it's important to look at your stack and choose bales that are most representative of the stock. So in other words, if you've grown this forage yourself, and you've got an area that floods from time to time, and it's got a bunch of weeds coming in it and a bunch of grass that thrives in more acidic soils, that's not representative of the stand. That's a pocket. And so you want to avoid bales like that. And you want to choose bales that are representative of the stand. If you're sampling round bales, you go through the round side, not the flat side. And make sure if you have round bales wrapped in bale net, that there's no plastic from the bale net that gets into the bag. Because if it's an NIR analysis, which stands for near infrared spectroscopy, it really throws off the calibration. It doesn't work, bottom line, if there's bits of plastic in there. And that means the lab tech has to go through and pick the bits of plastic out. And so just make sure, you know, take a knife, cut a little hole in the plastic, and then do your core. Make sure you do, I would say, 10 bags. You should have a large Ziploc bag at least half full. And then check with the Peace River Forage Association, and they will have a list of labs. There's a good lab in Calgary, and there's two or three good ones down in the Lower Mainland. You pop it in the mail and provide a phone number. They'll phone you. You can provide an email. You send them a visa. It's about $30 to $35. It's just gone up, I think, for an analysis. And depending on the lab, the analysis will be done. They're all satellite labs for either Equianalytical or Cumberland Valley. And both of those are very good labs with a very good database supporting their near-infrared spectroscopy calibrations.
Mm-hmm. If people would like to reach out to you, do you still offer consultation services as well? And where could people find out more about you?
I'm semi-retired now. I'm always happy to talk to people on the phone. A lot of people connect with me, you know, just through Facebook, or they could contact you. I know Lori Vickers is away right now. I know Lori very well, and by all means, shoot me an email. I'd be happy to get back to you.
Perfect.
If
awesome.
You have questions. I know, you know, growing forages in the I worked for years doing forage recommendations and. Working with forage analyses for both dairy cattle and horses in the Fraser Valley. And it's quite a different growing area up in the Peace. But some of these same rules apply, these same cautions and these same rules apply for with respect to ensuring you've got a good sample and how do we supplement that forage to ensure that we are looking after what our horse needs, whatever their job is.
Wonderful. That's all I had and that's all you had. So unless you wanted to add something else, I think we got her.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back. If you found this a valuable chat, make sure you also listen to the first part of Sheila's talk in episode 9, if you haven't done so already. Now, given that this has been a bit of a challenging season, if we shall say so, it might be worthwhile to have a look at Forage Fact Sheet number 30, Getting the Most from Your Soil Moisture. So let's dive into the Forage Fact Sheet vault and look at Forage Fact Sheet number 30. Interestingly enough, this was prepared in 2004, and looking at the introduction, it's pretty much the same as we experienced this year. Listen to this. Last year's growing season and lack of rain left much of the soil moisture depleted, especially in the South Peace region. Ranchers may have been asking, how can I make the best use of what little moisture I have? Sound familiar? In essence, this Forage Fact Sheet attempts to share some of the knowledge from other prairie areas with experiences managing drought conditions. First off, let's understand soil moisture and available water. There's a term called field capacity. It is used to describe the amount of water in the soil when deep drainage stops. So that's the most water the field can hold. Then there's the wilting point, which is the point at which crops can no longer draw moisture from the soil because the soil particles are hanging on so tightly to the remaining water. Anything in between the field capacity and the wilting point is considered available water. So that's the amount of water available to your plants. In the Forage Fact Sheet, there's a lovely graph showing this a bit better if you're more of a visual person. As a rule of thumb, about a half of the total soil water is available to the plants. And available water will naturally vary with soil texture. As you can imagine, sandy soil and clay soil will have different ways of holding the water. For example, clay hanging on really tightly because it'll bind a lot more water versus sand, but then sand also not being able to hold back that much water. Again, if you'd like to see this illustrated, I suggest you go have a look at the Forage Fact Sheet number 30 and look at the lovely graph on page 1, which will do a much better job than me explaining what the differences look like. So what can you do in terms of increasing the moisture that's available for your plants? One thing is to reduce tillage, both in terms of tillage passes and depth, because that will save valuable moisture that is needed for germination and the growth of your crops, while simultaneously also saving you the cost and labor having to go back and forth on the field. Reducing tillage can also buffer the soil from reaching wilting point. Remember, that's the point where the plants cannot take any more water from the soil, by 2 to 4 weeks under low rainfall conditions. That's quite a considerable time period, if that's maybe the 2 to 4 weeks that you need to get your crop to a stage of harvest. Another thing you can do is managing your hay cutting height and restricting fall grazing. This will help trap some snow in the following season and conserve some snow melt, trapping spring rains and reducing evaporation. Now, this may be a little bit harder if you're already in a hay shortage and you would really need to harvest all the hay that is there. But if you are also having in mind that you still need to be able to harvest something the following year, this is considered an investment into building your soil organic matter and then also building back your soil moisture. It may not be possible on all of your fields, but who knows? Maybe you can do it on one of your fields or two of your fields and leave a bit of a higher stubble height into the winter, or trying not to graze that particular field right before winter so that it does go into the winter with a considerable stubble height. How else can you manage soil moisture? While there are certain factors like soil texture that you just cannot change and you have to work with what is given, there are other factors that are much more under your control, such as the management of the organic matter. You can try and increase the organic matter by having higher litter at the end of your haying and grazing season, or by adding more organic matter to the field, such as by adding manure or doing winter grazing through swath grazing, bale grazing, or other extensive winter feeding situations where you're adding more organic matter to the soil and thereby increasing your soil's ability to store and hold moisture. Managing your crop rotation to include annual forages, cover crops, or using mixtures with both tap-rooted and shallow-rooted species will also maximize the usage of the available water. Finally, forage fact sheet number 30 provides a few summary points, such as consider soil texture and available moisture, reduce depth of tillage if reseeding your forage stand, pay attention to seeding depth and closing behind your openers and packing, reduce the width of seed openers if that is possible, reduce tillage passes or consider direct seeding into the stubble, ensure soil to seed contact with all your seeding, plant annual forages that are more resilient in low moisture conditions, cut your hay higher and leave more residue in your grazing fields and hay fields to reduce evaporation loss and retain more soil moisture. Also, add organic matter to increase available water holding capacity. As always, please check out all of the forage fact sheets that we have available at peaceforage.bc.ca. In addition to the forage fact sheet, I will also indicate 8 different resources in the show notes that may be of assistance if you are dealing with drought. Here's a summary of some of the things that you might want to think about as you're working your way out of this dry condition. Feed testing may be more important than ever to understand how you can combine the rations out of the remaining feed that you have. You may also be able to incorporate some failed annual crops because the dry conditions have also created a lot of annual crops that did not make it to the regular annual crop market and may now be available in the feed market. But there are some important considerations if you are incorporating those into your rations, and you will want to make sure you balance your rations and talk to a nutritionist if there are any anti-quality factors in those annual crops that you're incorporating. There may also be other things that you want to think about, such as preg testing, to make sure that you are not carrying any open animals into the winter if you're already short on feed. Then definitely go back, look at your beef rations, rule of thumb. We also had an interview with Barry Iremcio, who talked very in-depth about all the different nutrition aspects that you might want to think about. So please go back and listen to those episodes as well. And finally, you might want to look at tax deferral options, agri-recovery options, other financial tools that may be available to you through your insurance offerings that you have subscribed to. I do wish you all the best in managing your conditions, whatever they may be. If they are working out of a dry condition or recovering from a wildfire that went through your operation. But maybe there's also some good news stories out there of people who have been successfully practicing drought management and soil conservation practices and have built up their soil organic matter and practiced drought-proofing of their pastures, and they are now in a position where these investments that they have made over the years are paying off for them. Maybe there are some stories of high-intensity rotational grazing, kind of like Neil Dennis was teaching us from Saskatchewan. And if those stories are out there, I really would love to hear them, and I would love to share them with our listeners so we can, again, share this knowledge with other forage growers and livestock producers, because you know how the saying goes, all boats rise with the tide. So if we could all understand how to improve our pastures and make them more resilient to all these crazy things that the weather is throwing at us, then we will all be better off and all have a better chance of building a financially successful operation that is sustainable and that is something the next generation can also take over. So if there are stories out there of lessons learned, good news stories, and just crazy things in forages that might be valuable for other people to know about, please do reach out at coordinator@peaceforage.bc.ca. And while you're at it, please give us a like and share this podcast with others who might benefit from the information that we're sharing here. And also giving you a little teaser that we have a couple more interviews planned with folks from AAFC Lethbridge and with Sarda from Alberta. So stay tuned for that. Keep checking for new episodes. And in the meantime, may the forge be with you.